Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, and it is my great pleasure to be here with my engineer and co-host, Cynthia McClure.
Hello, Susan.
We'll start off the weather. We are having a little break from excessive heat like they're having in the rest of the country. And tonight is expected to get down as low as 49 degrees, just barely making it into the 40s. And tomorrow should be in the upper 70s. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms and showers are expected, as well as on Wednesday and Wednesday night, with temperatures during the day in the low 80s. Thursday and Friday, it seems unsure whether we're looking for rain or sun, but expect another sunny weekend ahead with days in the low 80s. And we don't have a prediction for the 4th of July, but we'll be talking about that later. We want to start our program with a phenology report from our resident naturalist, Pat Schlarbaum. So,
phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The last frost of spring or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's phenology are the house finches. So did you know that a songbird with a beautiful voice has come to Iowa from New York City? House finches are small-bodied finches the size of our state bird, the American goldfinch. They have fairly large beaks and somewhat long, flat heads. Their wings are short, making the tails seem long by comparison. Their story of coming to Iowa is unique to only a very few species. In the first part of the 20th century, house finches were trapped in California and transported to the East Coast pet stores. People loved their singing. However, trapping and selling songbirds is a violation of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918. New York pet shop owners, who had been selling the finches illegally, released their birds in 1940 to escape prosecution. The finches survived and began to colonize the New York suburbs. So by 50 years later, in the 1990s, they had advanced halfway across the continent and meeting their western kin on the Great Plains. So there has been an eastern migration from the West Coast as they have acclimated to urban and suburban habitat. It has been a migrator from both coasts, but it has received a warmer reception than other arrivals like European starlings and house sparrows. These are the S birds that are a scourge to native birds that fight for available food and nest sites. The house finches are very accepting, and partly due to the cheerful red head and the breast of the males and to the bird's long twittering song, which can now be heard in most neighborhoods of the continent. If you haven't seen one recently, chances are you can find one at the next bird feeder you come across or right here at the Pantorium, 410 Douglas, downtown Ames. House finches have been nesting. The adult males are rosy red around the face and upper breast with streaky brown back, belly, and tail. In flight, the red rump is conspicuous. Adult females aren't red. They have a pale gray brown with thick, blurry streaks and an indistinctly marked face. There is a winter finch in Iowa that is similar in coloration. These are the purple finches, but they do not nest here like the house finches. These birds appear to be dipped in raspberry for a more complete coloration than the house finches. House finches are delightfully red raspberry that includes some darker streaking, or their red is placed while the purple finch red coloration is more complete. I'm sure birders have other field mark characteristics to compare purple finches with house finches in winter. But house finches are gregarious birds that collect at feeders or perch high in nearby trees. When they're not at feeders, they feed on the ground or weed stalks or in trees. They move fairly slowly and sit still as they shell seeds by crushing them with their rapid bites. Their flight is bouncy like most finches. So in breeding season, the male performs a flight song display, singing while fluttering up through the slow wing beats and then gliding down. Male feeds the female during courtship and incubation. Males may sing at any time of year, but mostly in the spring. And the females also sing during spring. The nest is a wide variety of sites, especially in conifers, palms, ivy, or buildings. They average about 12 to 15 feet above the ground. Sometimes they use sites such as cavities or, as in Ames, hanging planters or old nests of other birds. The nest is built mostly by the female, is an open cup of grass, weeds, some twigs, and rootlets, sometimes with feathers, string, or other nest material is added. They have laid 4 or 5 pale blue with black and lavender dots eggs. Incubation is by the female about 13 or 14 days. Both parents feed the nestlings, and the young leave the nest about 12 to 15 days after hatching. They can nest up to 3 broods per year, perhaps sometimes more. So both parents feed the young, mostly seeds and berries. Almost all of the diet is vegetable matter. Other important items include buds and flower parts in spring, berries, and small fruits. Also eats a few insects, mostly small ones, such as aphids. The young are fed on regurgitated seeds. So pairs may begin to form within flocks in winter, and some paired birds may remain together all year. And that's what we're striving for here at the Ames Pantorium. They are nesting at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames. And this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOY Community Radio. And this is our phonology for today, the house finches of the Ames Pantorium.
Oh, well, thank you, Pat. That was a great lead-in because, of course, we're singing in here in the studio at 410 Douglas at the Ames Pantorium. The rest of this show is about celebrating the 4th of July with fireworks, which were just made legal for sale in Iowa this year, and with bells. For the bells, we'll have a new recording made just last week at the Bethesda Lutheran Church in Ames with the adult choir under the direction of Dan Hinderacher and the bell choir directed by Nick Kaiser. The song, Ring the Bells, was a collaboration between Lynn Ziegler, for 10 years organist at Bethesda, and Charles Knicker, lyricist. We wanted to know what inspired Charles to write this song, but he couldn't be with us today, so this is what he wrote. Early in our partnership, he says, Lynn Ziegler and I traveled to Washington, D.C. and toured the Holocaust Museum. We were there the week after a guard had been killed in 2009. We were moved by one of its themes, that we can lose our freedoms in if we forget the past. We wrote a song entitled Freedom that was appropriate for the Holocaust observation. Either shortly before or after that, we created another holiday song, a Thanksgiving prayer. I had been given a book of Table Graces by a daughter-in-law and found a short Ralph Waldo Emerson thought, which became the refrain of that song. For health and food, for love and friends, for everything thy goodness sends, Father in heaven, we thank thee. These two songs prompted us to think about doing a series of holiday and special observance songs, not necessarily in traditional religious language. The idea of the 4th of July, or Independence Day, came up right away. We began by recalling the words included in a letter from John Adams to his wife Abigail on July 2nd, 1776. I am apt to believe that the Declaration of Independence will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore. The inclusion of bells inspired Lynn to have bells vigorously ringing. She wanted a tune and text that would be celebratory, hence our refrain ending with, Come, celebrate, come, celebrate. As I focused on the text, I wanted to emphasize freedom. I remembered President Franklin D. Roosevelt, in January 1941, had given a speech on four freedoms: freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, hunger and shelter, and freedom from fear, especially what FDR saw as the arms buildup happening. His speech emphasized that a peaceful world would come only when all nations experienced those freedoms. 2 years later, the popular artist Norman Rockwell made his interpretation of those four freedoms on his cover for the journal Saturday Evening Post. The most famous one was the freedom from want, and it is still widely reprinted. It depicts a multi-generational family gathering at Thanksgiving with one enormous turkey. Now, as in 1940s, there were differences of opinion about what Roosevelt's four freedoms meant. The first two, freedom of speech and freedom of worship, had less disagreement than the latter two. Today's political environment brings differences of opinion even to those two. That could be the discussion for another program, but it's probably time to read those actual words that are in the hymn. The freedom of speech, what we have, we want for all. Freedom of speech and print that's strong. To defend truth is our call. Uphold the right, address the wrong. Verse 2, freedom of religion. What we have, we seek for all. Worship freely in our own ways. Between church and state, keep the wall. Let each discern how best to praise. Verse 3, freedom from want. What we have, we hope for all. Freedom from want, no one not fed. Air and water, pure and clean, insist that all be safe in bed. Verse 4, freedom from fear. What we have, we ask for all. Freedom from fear and tyrant's wars. Cost is high, so let's stand tall. Protect the weak, both near and far. Ring the bells, light the sky, fire the cannon, hold flags high. Come celebrate, come celebrate. So let's hear it. from Ringing the Bells in celebration of this piece by Lynn Ziegler and Charles Knicker, we're going over to Nevada to the fireworks tent.
I'm working at the Iowa Fireworks Company.
And this is a Saturday. Have you been here all day?
Yes, I have.
But how many people have come by to buy fireworks?
I'd say probably 50 people at least.
So it's been pretty steady.
Yeah, it has been. Mm-hmm. Some people are so excited about this. One family spent like $415 in one trip.
I'm just trying to get some fountains and cones for the grandkids and some of these little shooting eye things. That's about it. You guys carry the smaller ones of these cones that are fountains. He's going to go get me a handful of them. First time legal, you know, in Iowa, so
yeah.
First or second day is open. I kind of over-splurged a little bit, but...
You like fireworks?
Yeah, I like them myself. Uh-huh. I never really went out of state to get any. Actually, other people did. We'd get some from other people, but...
Where are you going to be shooting them off?
Zering.
So you came down from Zering?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a monkey-driving car that my daughter saw the other day that we had several that we played with. It's the monkey sitting in a car that it kind of just starts sputtering, and then lots of sparks coming out of it, and it'll actually start moving across the sidewalk. So, of course, my kids have had fun with that, watching it.
And where are you from?
Nevada, here in Nevada.
Is this the first time you're buying fireworks in Iowa?
Yes, it is. Just looking for some just firecrackers and maybe some Roman candles. Take them out of my farm and shoot them off.
Light them off.
Okay. We're heading to the Iowa Speedway, so we might go out to see the campsites and stuff, go to the race, and then come back here and light some fireworks off. I'm just buying some bottle rockets and fun stuff, I guess, for the night.
And my dad won. These two colored spaceship.
What are you going to do with them?
I just shoot them off, probably at my house, McCallsburg.
So you came down from McCallsburg?
Yep.
I just stopped by to get the Black Cat Gatling gun. It shoots flaming balls into the air, and then it separates and makes all kind of crackles. It's pretty sweet. Shoot it off and have a good time.
When? Where?
Tonight in Colo.
Nice.
Small little gathering.
In Colo?
First year ever buying them, but it's my fourth time being here.
Okay, how much money have you spent here?
In total, I spent about $500. I lit off a couple hundred worth last night. Very good stuff.
Is this the first time you've had your own fireworks?
Legally, yes.
Okay. I'm from Nevada. We've gotten some of the bottle rockets. We've gotten Morning Glory sparklers, because I remember doing those when I was little. Our neighbors have their little setup, and we have our setup. And he's doing it on his sidewalk in his backyard. We're doing it on our sidewalk in our front yard. And we have our kids that are getting excited for the chance to play with fireworks. Since this is all new to them, we've started with the small stuff to acclimate them. You know, I want them to learn the same things I learned, so they don't go towards the fireworks even after it has gone off. Just, I grew up where my grandpa was able to teach me a ton of stuff about fireworks, and so now it's kind of getting to pass it on that my kids can have the same fun, and I'm reliving those memories I had with my grandpa. I would love it if he was here today to be able to do this. So it's a reminder of my grandpa, and of just seeing the excitement in my kids' faces is amazing.
You just heard a two-part recording. The first was Ring the Bells by Charles Knicker and Lynn Ziegler, performed by the Ames Bethesda Bell Choir, which was recorded last week at the church. Then we heard from some people at the tent in Nevada buying fireworks legally in the first fireworks business set up in Nevada. And this is because last spring, Governor Terry Branstad signed the fireworks legalization bill, SF-489, into law, allowing fireworks to be sold in Iowa. The Iowa Legislative Services Agency says fireworks sales should bring in about $1.1 million in sales tax revenue this year. Just south of the Fawcett Aquatic Center in Nevada, The Thompsons, a family who actually live in Jefferson, are selling a colorful array of fireworks with equally colorful names, as you just heard. I visited the Thompson store. This was Ursula Rudenberg who made this report, and learned that they use the fireworks store to raise money for a charity called Lieutenant Captain Bell Carmody. Lance Corporal Ben Carmen Academy. Philip Thompson was there and explained that the charity comes out of his family's military tradition. The Ben Carmen Academy is a service to help soldiers get off to a good start and to give them personal support in reaching their personal goals throughout their time in the service. Philip explained that their support starts with an orientation program even before soldiers start basic training.
Before they go to basic training, we give them a crash course of basic training. We teach them basic rifle marksmanship on our range. We have full barracks, rifle range, and a classroom. So we go through teaching patrollings and drill and ceremony. Basically everything they're going to learn in basic training in a weekend crash course. So when they go to basic, they're the hot shot that people look to, and they know what's going on. They're less stressed out because they're not getting barked at learning things for the first time drinking water from a fire hose. So it gives them, but really we just use that apparatus to get them networked. So we bring them in, we teach them that stuff, they get a real tangible thing out of it. But in the meantime, we get them linked up with somebody who has a similar career path with them in their military career that they chose. And then they've got that big brother to call back to. So we help people get the contract they want because from what the first conversation they have with us is, I want to do this in the military. We make sure that they don't go to a recruiter clueless. We talk to them about what they can expect, like give them real big brother answers. And so they're not just getting hustled by recruiters. Recruiters try to put you in the job that the Army needs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we fight for them. We help them get the contracts they want. We get them bonuses. We're basically their agent from start to finish. And when they get done, they become an agent for somebody else who's starting up their military career.
So it's like throughout their experience in the military, they have somebody to advocate for them and give them advice.
Exactly. So start to finish, when they're going to have their first conversation with the recruiter, to when they sign up, to when they're in the military, they always call back and say, hey, you know, one of my Joes got a DUI. How do I handle this? How do I counsel him? How do I deal with this? So even as they grow up in the ranks, we've got all kinds of people from all different occupations in the military, you know, in senior enlisted, senior officers, whatever their career path is, we get them linked up.
So you're really like a grassroots local arm of the military process.
Oh, we try to be. I mean, we know the process really well. And I was the youngest of six kids. And then I went to West Point, so did three of my siblings. So what we also do is send recommendations to our congressmen and senators and say, these are the kids you want to send to the academy. And then it's something tangible beyond just grades and ACT to pick who's going to be the future officers in the military. And so that's what we're trying to do for these kids that go in. They don't know that they can enlist and have a 20 on their ACT in high school and think, oh, I can't get into a real good school like that. And then we show them this kind of way to build up and through the military and get into these super awesome schools. I enlisted. I got the exact contract I wanted to. I went right to Ranger School and Airborne School. I got all the high-speed stuff I wanted to, but I wasn't like super hotshot. I just knew how to navigate the bureaucracy.
That was Philip Thompson from Jefferson, describing the Lance Corporal Ben Carmen Academy. Philip's father is here with us. Welcome. This is Charlie Thompson.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. You're a pastor, is that right?
Yeah, I'm a Methodist pastor. I'm a retired pastor, really, but I've got a one-quarter time pastorate, so I got something to get up for on Sunday morning.
How many children do you have in the military?
I have six children that are all veterans, including my daughter, who's also a pastor now. I got one on active duty right now in Korea.
Now, did I hear correctly that several of these went to West Point?
Yes. Actually, four of them went to West Point. Two of them thought better of it in the end. But one of them was my daughter went to West Point, and she left because of an injury. And the son you just listened to, Philip, went to West Point, and he was already an airborne ranger. And it just didn't work for him. So he left after he had an additional obligation. But he's in the National Guard now, and all of them are qualified as veterans. And I got one son who's a staff sergeant who's still serving, and he's in the intelligence in Korea right now.
Well, that's a pretty proud family.
Well, thank you.
Explain more about this academy. When did it start, and how does it work, and who runs it?
We started about 3 years ago, and it's been an effort in. We've been evolving this whole academy. We have a board that meets and talks about how we're going to meet this need. And this is what happens when a young person enlists in any of the branches of the military. Their training may not start for 6 months. Well, they signed up for the particular training they wish, you know, the military specialty. And before they can get there, they have some time. Then the recruiter has them come in every month and get them introduced to different aspects of military life, because it is really a cultural shock to come out of high school or even out of college and then go into the military. It's just a whole different realm of existence. So they kind of get them acclimated. And that's one of the things we're trying to do. We bring people to it's a long weekend, you know, 3 days. They come on a Friday and they're introduced to the rifles. We have semi-automatic military rifles, and we got six of those, so they can take them apart, learn to put them back together, and read a map. We have people that are retired or currently serving that come in to conduct some training and in first aid, the kind of things that they'd be exposed to in basic training. And when it's all done, they've had a taste of it. But the main thing that we have talked about, as Philip has mentioned, is getting these young people to understand that they are still an entity unto themselves. They don't just give themselves to the military. And they have the right and the responsibility to have formed their own network, so they know when they can get some advice from something other than this controlled environment. And they can find out, is this right? Is this wrong? This doesn't seem right. And they can call somebody that they've met before that is not obliged to the military, and they can get some good advice as to how to handle themselves. And usually it's, well, you listen to your first sergeant, listen to the people, yeah, that's right. Or if it's wrong, they can help them get the right kind of help.
Now, do you have any people who have come back, Ben, with some other problems, PTSD or wounds?
Well, that's to some extent that happens. Just about everybody has some kind of trauma. My children, my five boys, my daughter never got into a combat situation, but all my five boys did, and they all have to wrestle with some of the blood they've encountered and that they've had inflicted on them, and that they've been in their duty have inflicted on somebody else. But it always has something to do with that. And we've had other people who have called and wanted help who adjust to some of these things, and we try to point them in the right direction.
Well, so this is dedicated to Lance Corporal Ben Carman.
Right.
And he was just a kid that grew up around your
neighborhood?
He was my
neighbor.
Yeah, let's play some memories from Philip Thompson and a friend of Ben's who was in the tent when Ursula was there.
Ben Carman was killed in Ramadi, Iraq in 2004. It was the first loss, real loss we had of the conflict and really set our community back. I mean, it was just total shock.
You know, obviously this is in honor of him, the Academy, but that's, you know, it's carrying out what Ben was. Mm-hmm. The perfect role model, honestly, for anyone. He was always the person that would help out. He always knew how to make someone laugh, but he could also be serious at the same time. So say someone was struggling, he was there no matter what.
His grandfather, Robert Carman, was prisoner of war in World War II,
right,
with a lot of those other cats from Greene County. He was a really good friend of Terry Branstad,
yes.
Ran the party in Greene County. And they were neighbors with us. And my family had 14 combat deployments. And several years after Ben was in Ramadi, I went to the exact same place and saw the exact same areas that he patrolled in every day.
He was destined to be a Marine, and, you know, obviously it hurts like no other that he's gone, and we lost him that way. Sorry. But he is a true American hero.
Well, that's the recollections. And how did you decide to put the camp together in his honor?
Well, it was kind of obvious. He was... He was the only one in Greene County that lost his life in the service at that time, and we've had one others in Greene County since then, and it's been he grew up, you know, jumping on my trampoline, and he was really our neighbor and our friend, and took Philip to fishing when he was young, and it's just one of the family almost.
So your decision to sell fireworks, did this have anything to do with the Iowa Fireworks Company, a statewide business that sprang up after the legislation was passed?
Yeah, my sons, Philip and John, were in Des Moines, and they became aware of this opportunity. I'm not exactly sure how they got in touch with Jeremiah, but at any rate, they got together and saw this as an opportunity, and they called me and asked me, and I said, oh, yeah, I'm on board. So that was wonderful.
Well, we have Jeremiah DeHark on the phone with us, and he's the co-owner of the Iowa Fireworks Company. And so welcome, Jeremiah. How did you...
Thanks for having me.
I guess Charlie told how a little bit about how you connected, but explain the partnership a little.
Yeah, so one of my staffers actually was a Senate clerk last legislative session, and my understanding is that he had met one of them through there and thought that would be a great opportunity to work together to raise money for the Academy.
So did you have that in mind as you started these? You have 20 locations, I read.
Yes, one of the goals of Iowa Fireworks Company is that we're a local business that has sprung up to compete against some of the big national players, and part of the business is working with nonprofits to raise money for causes around the state. All of them, every tent has a purpose, and so some of the tents have paid staffers, and they've selected a nonprofit that does good in their local communities, and other tents are run entirely by volunteers.
Now, are there others who have who are contributing to the Ben Carmody camp? Carmen camp?
Well, no, not other tents. So the Nevada tent is specifically dedicated to the camp, yes.
I see. What are some of the other nonprofits that receive...
Yes, there's a few different groups. For example, Madrid, that location is actually the entire town has stepped up to they recruited us to have a location in the town, and they have over 60 volunteers in the town working in the tent to raise money for different community groups in the area, and they're all pitching in and working to benefit from the community. Other nonprofits range from church groups to the town of Osceola also has jumped in, and they're working to raise money for their new recreational center project. So every a percentage of the sale goes to back to that project for them.
And what percentage is that?
Well, every tent varies a little bit depending on what staffers need to be hired to supplement that. But many of the tents are we're selling a lot of fireworks, so we're hoping that each tent is able to raise a significant amount for each charity.
And how did you get to up and running so fast?
Well, we haven't slept very much, and we've had a lot of people pitching in to help all over the state, really going, working tirelessly. It's long, hard days being out there, and it's in the heat and in the wind, but it's something that we're having a lot of fun with, and just working very hard to make it happen.
Sure sounds like it. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Susan Franz, and here with my guest, Charlie Thompson. And we have been speaking with Jeremiah Terhawk, co-owner of Iowa Fireworks Company. Of course, Charlie, I just mentioned, he's also the owner of the fireworks sales tent in Nevada and co-founder of Lance Corporal Ben Carmen Academy, he's told us how they support people going into the military.
Is there anything either of you would like to share with the importance about fireworks? You know, because you can buy fireworks now in Iowa. Is there anything you guys?
Don't just turn your kids loose with them, but make sure that if the younger kids are, especially younger kids, are supervised and at least taught what this thing is going to do when you light it. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of getting hurt with anything, of course.
But fire and explosions are particularly
important. Yes,
to avoid.
You don't want to be really close when something explodes.
So, like training the children not to run toward the fireworks.
That would be an excellent thing to make sure they know that that can really hurt you. But it's fun to hear the bang, and I always tell people, be safe, but have fun.
Yeah, I chime in that fireworks are a dangerous product. It's fire and explosions, and it should be treated very carefully and cautiously. And if everybody's following the general safety guidelines, which every sale that we give out a little safety handout as a way to help consumers know when and where it's appropriate to use them. No one needs to get hurt. If everyone's following the proper safety procedures,
So maybe contact your local fire department to find
out
what the local ordinance is. Ames, the city of Ames doesn't allow fireworks to be shot off in city limits, so you got to go outside of city limits. But contact your local either volunteer fire department or your city fire department and find out what the codes are and use common sense and have adult supervision. You know, it's just we don't want to have a Darwin Award here. So,
right.
No, and we should, in fairness, say that groups like the Iowa Firefighters Association, the Iowa Nurses Association, and Blank Children's Hospital had expressed opposition to legalizing fireworks sales in Iowa. And I would be interested to know, do you have a safety tip sheet? I believe.
Yes, we do. And we give one out with every sale, like Jeremiah said. We always watch people. And, you know, most people come in and they express concerns. They've had old experiences with it, you know, either they've been to Missouri and brought a few back or something, but most people aren't totally ignorant, but most people ask questions as to, you know, what this thing does so it doesn't jump at them and burn them. Most people are pretty sensible. And the ones that aren't, I try to discourage them from
buying them
stuff at all. But, you know.
Well, I have a question that was raised to me afterwards by someone who had heard the original morning program that about firecrackers. Now, in Ames, you're not allowed to light any fireworks inside the city limits. But I heard a complaint from somebody who lived in Nevada that they'd heard a lot of firecrackers. So what's the relationship there between
if you're on private property and, you know, and you're not – the fire marshal told me that after 2 days that they'd had 13 complaints and that 11 of them, the people were conducting themselves perfectly legally and safely. It was just that somebody was irritated about the noise. The two that weren't safe, of course, were pretty harebrained. Somebody is shooting a Roman candle out of an apartment window. That's definitely something you don't want to be doing. But
so alcohol and fireworks
alcohol,
should not.
No, alcohol should not
never
be mixed. No, that's as bad as driving with alcohol. No, you don't want to have any
intoxication
impairment at all of any kind.
So common sense. Be respectful of your neighbors. Know your city ordinances. And protect any children that may be a little too curious about all this, because the life you could save mm-hmm. could be someone you love and care for.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Charlie Thompson and Jeremiah Terhock.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Bye. So, bye.
On the road of experience and trying to find my own way. Sometimes I wish that I could fly away. When I think that I'm moving, suddenly things stand still. I'm afraid 'cause I think always will, and I'm looking for space, and to find out who I am, and I'm looking to know and understand, it's a sweet, sweet dream, sometimes I'm almost there. Lost in the sadness and the screams, and I look in the center, suddenly everything's clear, I find myself in the sunshine.
Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Susan Franzen, together with Cynthia McClure.
Hello.
We've been talking about fireworks, but before we leave the topic, there are those among us who don't enjoy fireworks so much. Many animal shelters report a high rate of lost pet incidents around the 4th of July. As we all know, dogs in particular are prone to suffer. If yours has a meltdown, there are a number of reasons. He or she can't anticipate fireworks the way you do. Fireworks aren't the same experience as a thunderstorm. Thunderstorms come with a lot of warning signs, like changes in barometric pressure and high winds, so dogs anticipate them. Since fireworks are sudden and occur less frequently than thunderstorms, dogs might be more intimidated by them. They experience startled responses such as heart rate, a rush of adrenaline, and an increase in stress hormones circulating through the body. Remember, dogs have acute hearing. They also have an acute sense of smell, and fireworks produce an odor that dogs are sensitive to.
Here's a list of don'ts. These are things not to do. Do not take your dog to a fireworks display. Don't tie your dog up outside while fireworks are being let off. Don't assume your garden is escape-proof or your backyard. If your dog needs to go out, keep him on a lead just in case. Don't leave your dog on his own or in a separate room from you. Don't try to force your dog to face its fears. He or she will just become more frightened. Don't forget to top out the water bowl. Anxious dogs pant more and get thirsty. Don't change routines and your behavior more than necessary, as this can alarm dogs more. Don't try and tempt him out if he does retreat, as this may cause more stress. And don't tell your dog off. Don't yell at your dog. This will only make your pet more distressed, and it is important to remember that it is natural for your pet to be scared at loud noises and unfamiliar sights and sounds. And this can be said about cats, too, but we're gearing it toward dogs right now.
Right. But there's some things that you should do. You should feed your dog a while before you expect any disturbances, as once the fireworks start. Did I hear thunder?
No. It's just the...
Okay. Once the fireworks start, your dog may be too anxious to eat. Do walk your dog before dusk so your dog can relieve itself before the noise starts. Do keep a collar and ID tag on your dog just in case he does accidentally escape. Do make a safe den for your dog to retreat to, or let your dog take refuge under furniture and include an old, unwashed piece of clothing so that your dog can smell your scent and feel comfortable. Wow. I really like that one. Do distract your dog from the noise by having the TV or the radio switched on. Do try to act and behave as normal. Don't pet more or fuss over your dog, as your dog will be alarmed by unusual behavior. Remain calm, and this will reassure your dog. Do reward calm behavior with dog treats or playing with toys of interest. Do, if he or she comes to you for comfort, make sure that you give it to him or her.
So these are tips for your pet during this 4th of July time when the loud noise will maybe frighten them and cause anxiety.
Well, there's also something else that we ought to make sure that everybody knows, and that is that in Ames, the 4th of July fireworks are on the 3rd, on Tuesday. I mean, Monday, the 3rd,
mm-hmm.
Not on Tuesday, the 4th. There'll be a lot of other events on the 4th, but the big fireworks, and the reason for that, and there's some other things too. I think the reason is that there's less demand for these things, and so it's cheaper, and you can get more bang for the buck if you have your fireworks on July 3rd, and then you can recover on July 4th, or just come out and...
Or you could go to some other town and celebrate their 4th of July.
That's right. You could go down to Slater. You know, that's huge. Slater is huge.
Oh, Slater. 4th of July. Huxley, Slater, any of these lovely towns in central Iowa.
Well, but Slater's that's their big festival.
The 4th of July?
Yeah, they don't have a Scandinavian Days. They don't have a Fireman's Days. They put it all out. They put it all out, and it's reunion time.
I bet you they'll have fresh corn, too.
They probably will.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have I didn't check this, but I can't imagine it's not true, the Ballard Community Band that everybody down in South Story County loves. And but in Ames. City limits. Well, yes. Actually, the fireworks, according to what the city hall just told me, they are going to be the big display, not the private ones, but the big display will be set off quite near the stadium, the football stadium, where people can go to watch the fireworks.
So the parking lot where everybody
is, it's D, parking lot D, G7. So it'll probably be pretty well marked, so you're not likely to go in there and park. But there's another great place to watch the fireworks, and that is Ryman Gardens, which is open without cost for that period and that day. And they have a display in their terrarium, I guess. That is called All Washed Up. So go to Ryman Gardens, go to the stadium, and enjoy the fireworks. And there is the KHOI parade along with everybody else on the 4th of July from 10 to noon. And so watch for our banners. This is Local Talk. You've been listening to with your host, Susan Franzen, and our host and engineer, Cynthia McClure.
Yep.
And people that you've heard from today are Philip Thompson, Charlie Thompson, and Jeremiah Terhock. And the music that you heard is, as always, our theme song, Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris, and their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And we had a premiere of Ring the Bells by Charles Knicker and Lynn Ziegler. And we had some John Denver. What was that, Cynthia?
That John Denver song was Looking for Space.
And Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear KHOI. I'm not sure whether you can hear it live online at khoifm.org. You might be able to today. You couldn't have heard this morning's. You will also find a recording of this show and on our homepage as soon as our webmaster is able to post it, with links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! From 8 to 9. Well, nope. I guess we're
using the script from this morning. So
yes.
But so remember, in the morning, Democracy Now! Will come on right after KHOI Local Talk.
That's right, and it also comes out on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
This spring, KHOI asked you, our loyal listeners, to help us raise money toward our operations expenses. Thanks to your generosity and that of several premier donors who established a matching grant, we were able to exceed our fundraising goal. Because of your support, we are able to continue serving Central Iowa through the broadcast of community ideas and values for the foreseeable future. If you would still like to contribute to KHOI, give us a call at 515-292-2878 or visit us online at khoifm.org and click the donate button. Thank you again for making KHOI a reality in the heart of Iowa, and we'll see you again on the radio.